Hello and welcome to the documentary, The Cultural Frontline from the BBC World Service, the program that explores the world we live in through the work and voices of artists. I'm Sienna Greaves, and I'm looking at the life and legacy of one of America's most influential thinkers, writers, and activists, James Baldwin. His cutting commentary on the racial and socioeconomic realities of the United States called attention to the daily oppression and injustices facing Black and brown people. And 100 years after his birth, we look at how his words continue to inspire and the issues that he highlighted still continue to impact and resonate today.
It comes as a great shock around the age of 5 or 6 or 7 to discover that the flag to which you have pledged allegiance, along with everybody else, has not pledged allegiance to you. It comes as a great shock to discover that Gary Cooper killing off the Indians when you were rooting for Gary Cooper, that the Indians were you. It comes as a great shock to discover that the country which is your birthplace and to which you owe your life and your identity has not in its whole system of reality evolved any place for you.
That's James Baldwin speaking in 1965. And please note, this episode contains some outdated racial language that could cause offense. James Baldwin has had a profound impact on American culture and its intellectual history. In his novel, If Beale Street Could Talk, he gives us the harsh realities and limitations of racism while including a tender and heartwarming look at Black love. In essays such as Notes on a Native Son and The Fire Next Time, he tells how color is not a human or personal reality, but a political one. Recently, there's been a resurgence in the popularity of Baldwin's works and ideas. Films like 2016's I Am Not Your Negro reintroduced Baldwin to a new, younger audience of artists and thinkers. And the high-profile violent deaths of Black men and women, many at the hands of police, has led a new generation to his works.
New York's iconic streets were littered with the debris of rage over the death of George Floyd, but also giving vent to years of festering frustration with police mistreatment of African Americans.
In this episode of The Cultural Frontline, I leave the U.S., where I work as a news producer in Chicago, and journey to France, where Baldwin moved in the 1940s to escape the enforced racial segregation of the Jim Crow laws. In Paris, I joined a week-long centenary celebration, which was being held at La Maison Baldwin, bringing together Black artists impacted by Baldwin and whose work continues his legacy.
Baldwin's spirit is very strong. He just had such a compelling way of getting right to the heart of the matter and speaking such undeniable truth. That's why he is, you know, the legend that he is.
James Baldwin was born in 1924 in Harlem, New York, the oldest of 9 children. He grew up in the church, listening to his stepfather's sermons, and at a very young age understood the profound impact words could have on those who listened. As a teenager, he became a preacher as well and talked about how those early years in the pulpit turned him into a writer.
Baldwin is someone who has given me language.
Achille Tenkiang, poet, writer, and founder of the Baldwin Institute.
In my opinion, Baldwin's most powerful reflections on the role of the artist in shaping a better world comes from this 1962 essay, The Creative Process. He writes, "The artist is present to correct the delusions to which we fall prey. In a society that seeks to keep us perpetually preoccupied with trivial matters, in a world that insists on reducing us all to automatons, it is the artist's role to step into the chaos and to bear witness to the truth of the human condition. Artists must, I think, drive us out of ourselves in order to find ourselves again and remind us of the humanity we share with others. Art is here to remind us of what we fear we have forgotten." As a poet, I've always sort of like drawn from his ability to weave the personal with the political, the intimate with the universal, and anchoring in this idea of language not only being this tool for communication, but also for liberation. I think his use of metaphor, of rhythm and cadence, has really informed my exploration of how to make language both precise and expansive.
Ashiel is one of the writers taking part in La Maison Baldwin's centennial celebrations. The focus of this nonprofit organization is on preserving Baldwin's legacy of art and activism through workshops and artist talks and other events throughout the year. Tara Phillip is executive director of La Maison Baldwin. She tells me more about why Baldwin made the decision to move to France.
He came here in 1948. You know, the famous stories had $40 in his pocket. His motivation was that he realized he would not survive if he remained in the United States due to the persecution of black people. His own identity as a gay man put him in a vulnerable position living in Harlem uptown. And so he picked up and moved to Paris and felt that he not only could be free here as far as his identity, but also free here to write and to be creative.
Like Baldwin, Tara is also a writer and an American emigre living in Paris.
I think he found a community of writers and artists who he could really connect with. He found opportunities to further explore his own desires, whether that was creatively or romantically. He found just a way to also look more critically at the United States and at his home. Paris gave him that space to do that. And I think he just felt generally just free and liberated. And, you know, I can relate to that as an expat from the United States, a black expat from the United States, where here, while there's certainly issues around racism and oppression and a history of colonialism, and, you know, our brothers and sisters here from the African diaspora have an experience, I think for black Americans, we're not always wearing our race here. We're pretty much more seen as an American first than a black person, as opposed to in the United States, where it's just so visible everywhere we go.
For Baldwin, his newly acquired anonymity allowed him to connect with himself and continue his activism, reacting not only to the situation for black Americans, but also what was happening around him in France. French graphic novelist, filmmaker, and journalist Rokhaya Diallo.
They came in a country that was a colonial power. France was oppressing millions of people, you know, all across the world and on its own soil. And I'm grateful to Baldwin to have been able to see what was going on for other people. It came when the Algerian people were having their revolution. So he told about that, and he really was able to parallel the way Algerians were mistreated by the police here in Paris and how he faced the same kind of institutional oppression back home.
Welcome to your favorite weekly open mic here at Paris Club. How are you all feeling? So tonight, in celebration of James Baldwin's literary life and legacy, we, in collaboration with La Maison Baldwin, invite you to unleash your creativity, where participants can share their poetry, stories, and reflections inspired by James Baldwin's legacy.
At a small cafe in Paris's Belleville neighborhood, poet Ashiel Tenkiang takes the stage.
The title is a work in progress, but this is titled The Space Between What's Taken and What's Given, or Untitled in the Language of Fire. Baldwin knew the fire of displacement, the way a country can exile you while still calling itself home. I think of him in Paris, at the desk, writing love letters to Harlem, writing his way through the weight of a country that bruises its own children and then asks them why they're bleeding. I wonder if Baldwin would recognize the world as it is now.
Baldwin was someone who believed in the transformative power of love and also the artist's role to really kind of challenge and kind of like hold a mirror to society and forcing it to confront itself. And I think Baldwin offers a foundation for writers, for activists, for musicians, for artists, for so many of us who believe that art can truly change the world.
We keep dreaming. We keep building a world where the artist's hands are the hands of God, shaping the clay of what could be. And we dare to imagine together that this time the world will not look away. Thank you.
Detroit-based visual artist Sabrina Nelson is also in Paris. For her, the Inktober Challenge, where artists commit to creating an ink drawing every day in October, would plant the seeds for her exhibition, Frontline Prophet James Baldwin.
Something said to me, draw James Baldwin. And as I drew, I could see him come off the paper. I could see his eyes that are deep set, round. And you could see his nose and his teeth with the gap. And you could see his smile that kind of curls and then creates these lines around his face, almost like the Cheshire Cat. You know, there's a charm in Baldwin's smile.
What is it about those features that moved you so much?
He became beautiful to me. Like, his eyes were so expressive. His stepfather called him ugly, and he thought of himself in that way until he got older and he made jokes about it. But I feel like I was that child where, because I was the lightest one in my family and all of my cousins were dark brown, and I grew up in a time where everybody every day was saying black is beautiful, and they were like, oh, you'll be okay if you just darken up. So I dealt with the idea that I want to be prettier. I want to be darker. I started to see Baldwin in me. I started to see the beauty in him reflected through me. I drew him not only 31 days. It ended up being 91 days. I wasn't finished.
During her 91-day meditation on James Baldwin, Sabrina channeled him through his speeches and books.
I realized that his activism for me lies in the way that he planted seeds or nurtured seeds in children, and I'm doing that. I work at a college. I'm constantly interacting with young people who have the idea that they want to be this professional artist. And I'm like, we're going to change the world with who we are. The world needs us as artists. What do you want to say to the world that will leave something here for the next person to come so that we leave this place a better place for those that are behind us or those that are not yet here?
Frontline Prophet was exhibited around the United States before arriving at the American University of Paris for the centenary. Through sketches, paintings, installations, and augmented reality, Sabrina's created a world for art lovers and thinkers to immerse themselves in Baldwin. She says he inspires her as an artivist. So, what is an artivist?
What it means to be an artivist is to say something with your art, to reflect on something that's going on, whether it is my Blackbird series that's called Why You Want to Fly Blackbird, where I do a series of paintings that are dedicated to mothers who have to bury their children because other people don't value them like the mothers do. We tell our sons, if you are arrested, don't resist. If you are stopped, make sure your hands are shown. Be very careful what you say because they don't value you like I do.
I've been inspired by James Baldwin's his writings, his essays, his sharp wit, his sharp tongue. Baldwin was able to convince people who thought totally different from him that his work and the work and the words and the labor and the practices of Black people were valuable, instrumental in the survival of humanity.
Detroit-based curator Ashara Akundayo started reading Baldwin as a teen, shortly after her family moved from Detroit, Michigan to Denver, Colorado.
I went from living in a very Black city to a very white city. I was really lonely, you know, in high school. I was looking for some reflection of myself that I wasn't seeing. But I also found it intriguing, you know, knowing that he was gay and different. And at that time, I guess I just felt like he was a friend of mine. I had found an Uncle Jimmy.
Baldwin was out as a gay Black man at a time when there was no tolerance for those who identified as anything other than heterosexual. One of his most well-known works is Giovanni's Room, a story about an American expat in Paris who falls for an Italian bartender. When it was published in 1956, the slim novel was considered revolutionary and dangerous for its frank portrayal of gay and bisexual love. Baldwin was advised not to publish the book for fear of alienating his Black audience.
I believe that Baldwin's open queerness, his open gayness, his really open, I want to say I hear and see his throat, his mouth wide open, and his laughter and his, like, you know, gapped tooth smile in this way in which he's like, this is the way to be. Like, what a gift it is for me to, like, not be bound or confined to any particular way of loving. If I love you, I love you. And I believe that our creative ideas and our creative essence is also queer, because it's us saying our own thing. It's our own little story. So anything that allows me to just be queer, to be open, to be colorful, it's important that we see ourselves. It's important that young folks, old folks, have the opportunity to see the myriad of ways in which we can be human.
Today, Ashara continues to pull inspiration from Baldwin with her work as a curator and founder of Artist as First Responder, an organization she founded in California in 2018 that supports Black and brown artists who draw on their creative practices to help communities.
The co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, one of them was from and lived in Oakland, California. And so there was a lot of protest happening. There was a lot of opportunity for people to step right into the fire, right into the framework and confronting with police. There was also an opportunity to create a series of town halls in cities across the United States where women and femmes were able to come and sit in front of a commission to listen to the stories of what was going on, what was happening on our watch around education, around safety, around displacement and gentrification in these neighborhoods, around artistic creativity, what was happening. And so inside of that conversation, all of the stories came out or were gifted to community in these artistic ways. So dance, performance, theater, monologues, song, these different ways in which we told the story.
You're listening to the documentary, The Cultural Frontline from the BBC World Service. And we're looking at the life and legacy of one of America's most influential thinkers and writers, James Baldwin, marking 100 years since his birth. In 2020, following the murder of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police, the United States erupted in protests. The images of thousands of Americans taking to the streets, buildings on fire, and a collective outpouring of grief were beamed across the world.
Another night of chaos and unrest as anger over police killings spread to every corner of the country. Penetrating the heart of political power in Washington, D.C., security agents used tear gas to push protesters away from the White House.
Tara Phillip was living in Paris, thousands of miles away from her son in California.
It was hard. It was really hard. And in fact, I wrote a piece about it. And in that piece, I referenced James Baldwin because he wrote something in A Stranger in a Village about white people and kind of white identity that liberated my fear around my son and around just the situation. And in that, I think as black folks, it's so easy to internalize a lot of this oppression because it's just like, why are we being treated this way? You know, it's just a strange dynamic. And so James Baldwin was always good at saying, like, we are not the problem. They're the problem, you know? And so it was just good to reground in that notion.
And it's not just the murder of George Floyd. For more than a decade, a number of high-profile deaths of Black Americans have continued to spur mass protests and galvanize artists, including Sabrina Nelson.
You know, I'm fighting for Trayvon's mother. I'm fighting for Breonna's mother. I'm fighting for Rainisha's mother. I'm fighting for George Floyd's mother and his children. And looking at James Baldwin's mother at, you know, some funeral pictures, like how dare people take them? And someone always has a camera in your face once you lose your child.
Journalist and filmmaker Rokhaya Diallo is one of the high-profile voices on racism and social justice movements in France. She's one of the speakers at La Maison Baldwin's centennial celebration. Diallo says she was pulled to activism in 2005 after the deaths of two Muslim teenagers in the Paris suburbs led to riots across that country.
It was central to me creating different forms of art. When those kids die and the uprising spread all over the country, I was kind of frustrated by the way it was covered by the media and how politicians dismissed the uprising. So I decided to tell those stories that were untold. I started to make documentaries, and my goal was to focus on people that are not the most visible and to make them look beautiful, because, you know, when you speak about race, when you speak about those kind of stories, it's always, you know, depicted in a very realistic way, which is okay, but the aesthetic is sometimes put aside. Thinking about Baldwin, what he escaped from and what he found here, and what he was also able to address in France, tells about our responsibility as activists, as artists, to document what's going on and to say things that are difficult to say, things that are hidden until the end of his life.
Baldwin had a talent for saying difficult things, and it comes up often in my conversations at the centenary, which was taking place less than 60 days before a contentious U.S. presidential election where immigration and race were at the fore. I asked Tara Phillip, executive director of La Maison Baldwin, what she thought Baldwin, an icon of the civil rights movement, would make of the current state of American politics.
I don't know. I would imagine he would feel like, well, nothing's really changed. Like, that's what he started to say in his later writings. And I think this is why he lost some popularity within the liberal white community. He was kind of telling them about themselves, like, you all don't change. You know, you don't really change. And it's very tricky to try to speak for him in this moment. But I know that he would continue to push us to look at what is the truth here in this situation, the truth around whether it's poverty, whether it's homelessness, whether it's racial violence, whether it's, you know, LGBTQ, you know, rights. And, you know, like, I just think he would continue to turn our lens to the things that we still need to improve upon without all the personality of those who we are electing.
It's hard not to think about Baldwin, to think about his centennial, and I guess not only the 2024 election, but even just stepping back and just thinking broader about, you know, some of the geopolitical issues that we're dealing with today.
Poet Ishiel Tenkiang is the founder of the Baldwin Institute, which works to empower Black and brown youth through the arts.
I think many of the issues that Baldwin wrote about, race, identity, justice, and national hypocrisy, are very much at the forefront of the political landscape. The culture wars in the U.S. have intensified, and we are seeing issues like race, gender, education, and freedom of speech becoming flashpoints in national debates. I think his insights on race, identity, and power, so starting with race and white supremacy, Baldwin's critique of systemic racism remains central to discussions about racial inequality in the U.S. In The Fire Next Time, one of my favorite quotes is when he writes, "The most dangerous creation of any society is the man who has nothing to lose." And his warnings about the explosive consequences of unaddressed racial injustice definitely still echoes today in the ongoing movement for Black lives. As a Black queer man, Baldwin, you know, wrote about what it meant to sort of live at the intersection of multiple marginalized identities, right? Baldwin is also critical about the U.S. education system, which he saw as complicit in maintaining the racial order and maintaining white supremacy by misinforming students about history and limiting their understandings of the true nature of American society. These critiques are echoed in all of these debates that we're having today over educational censorship, book bans, the misrepresentation of or exclusion of like Black history and other marginalized histories in school curricula. He still provides us a blueprint, a framework that we can use to kind of tackle some of these issues.
I love speaking about him in the present moment because he is immortal and because his words have been used and continue to be used right now. He's time traveling.
Curator Ashara Ekundayo.
For him to be so blatant with his declaration that we're not going anywhere, but we're going everywhere you're going. If you're going to the moon, I'm going to the moon. If you're going to university, I'm going to university. Whatever it is that we are going to do to stay on the planet, Black people are going to be part of that. You're not going to survive without us. In fact, we define the culture. So if you want to have a discussion around how we're going to get on together, we need to get about it right now.
From the pulpits of Harlem in the 1930s to a crowded cafe in Paris in 2024, the words of James Baldwin still stirs emotions to this day.
Brothers and sisters, everything now is in our hands. Yeah.
Frank Leon Roberts is a professor of Black Studies at Amherst College. At the open mic session during the centenary, he gives an electrifying reading from Baldwin's seminal work, The Fire Next Time. And though Baldwin no longer walks among us, in this room and beyond, his influence is evident in the artists he inspires and the movements he continues to shape.
And so if we, and by we, I mean the relatively conscious whites and the relatively conscious blacks, who must, like lovers, insist on or create the consciousness of the other, do not falter now in our duty. We may be able, handful that we are, to end the racial nightmare and achieve our country and change the history of our world. And we must do it now.
You've been listening to the documentary The Cultural Frontline from the BBC World Service. The program was recorded and presented by me, Sienna Greaves, and the producer was Andrea Kidd.